This is an oral interview of Jim Rominger of Breckenridge, Texas, an old-time scouter. Today is November the 26th, 1996, and I'm Frank Hilton. Jim, you've been in scouting since when?
1932. I was 12 years old. They had to be 12 at that age, you know, to go into it. And my first year at Camp Billy Gibbons was 1932 out of Troop 4 Cisco, which was met in the basement of the Methodist Church, which still stands, by the way. The Methodist Church of Cisco is still there. But Troop 101 from Cisco was the Presbyterian troop and met in the basement, and it's still. That's where we had Court of Honor and what have you.
What do you remember about Camp Billy Gibbons?
Well, the first thing you remember is getting down there. We weren't capable of having nice passenger cars and things like you have today, nor did you have a road that would accommodate a lot of things.
Well, even the road from here to Richland Springs was dirt road, wasn't
it? That's right. But the road from Richland Springs on down to Billy Gibbons could be called a road, all right, but it was awful rough and slow getting down there. You crossed the creek. The year before, they had built the dam that dammed up our swimming area there. Turn right and come on into this night, the con grove, big, huge trees. We had pyramidal tents, which were left over from World War One.
Squad tent
that sleeps eight, and that's about what we had in them, all right. The latrines that I showed you in a picture a minute ago were box latrines with no surrounding canvas, set on the edge of the creek so that any drainage would properly be dumped into the creek, or this day and time they would really give you a bad time. The mess hall that I showed you there a while ago was really the only permanent building there. It had a chat floor with the tables, and the trading post was a tent arrangement type thing. And you didn't spend money, you spent wampum. You bought wampum, which was Indian for
tokens or
pieces of deerskin.
Deerskin.
And marked with whatever it is, as I recall. How in the world that all works, I don't really remember for sure.
Probably made a deposit and got so much wampum for your deposit.
Those days you went down to camp, as I recall, on Wednesday, and came back on Tuesday, and that way Sunday was visitor's day, and you had church services on Sunday. The group I went with in Cisco that first year, were not as dedicated to scouting to a boy my age, 12 years old, coming into it. I was pretty idealistic at that time, and really the group that we had there was not as idealistic, let's put it that way.
Do you remember the names of some of the kids that
went to camp?
Yes, I do,
but I don't want to use them. And one of them was a preacher's son there, which
was typical preacher's son?
Yes, he was. And the beautiful part of that was, instead of getting discouraged, which I probably was a little bit afterwards, the next year they were all gone. And the ones that remained, the one or two that remained, were boys that you were glad to see back. And the others you were glad to send on their way to do the thing. One of them later became a doctor, which really has surprised me completely, because he was a German boy, and he was in school with him. He and his brother spoke German, so the teachers couldn't understand what they were saying, and they were in constant trouble. But I got into scouting, where I told you before, through Liviously Lankford, Judge Lankford's son there in Cisco, lived down the street. Livius made a surgeon in Dallas, and when we dedicated the monument to Uncle Billy in 77, I was in contact with him at that time, tried to get him to come and to do a talk, but he was also the editor of the paper, and obviously a comer from the day he entered into anything, whatever it was.
That was the paper for the camp, wasn't it?
That paper for the camp, right.
What do you remember about going to camp? What are some of the things you remember?
Well,
what did y'all do?
Remember, let's talk about the mess hall first. We ate on tin plates and drank out of tin cups. Tin has an ability to rust. It is solid, and even the best of it won't stand up very long with that kind of treatment. The meal, preceding the meal, you had an inspection. Dr. Weinbrenner very much involved in that. By inspection, I'm talking about you hold out your hands, and they go by to see. No uniforms. Nobody had uniforms in the camp. You had neckerchiefs. That designated your set of overalls, coveralls, from the others over there, you see. But you had this inspection, and if you were chosen to not have done very well, you went on a list, and the list had in it people who broke curfew. A bugler blew tattoo at 9:45, followed by taps at 10, and that's lights out. And you're expected to be in the bed, and you were in the bed. If you weren't, your name was also picked up. And the reason it was picked up is that at the meals, not at breakfast, but at lunch and supper, as I recall, you were awarded with some spats from a board that was not a little old board. It was a good-sized board. And the one who habitually did that for years was a man named Toots Gillum from Brownwood, who later was in the Red Cross office, I think, down there for years, whatever. He was our waterfront director, senior lifesaver, all of that stuff. And he was the one that gave the spats. And if you want to ruin a meal, is when you're sitting there eating, knowing that when it's over with, they're going to call your name to come up, and he gives you two or three licks with that board to where you remember,
in front of everybody else.
What it was about. This day and time, that would probably be called corporal punishment, I suppose. The waterfront program, I was back to the mess hall. I was trying to think today. I think we washed the tin, our tin, our own tin, but each one had his own. Army style, it's hot, soapy, and clean, in a clean water dip, hot dip, and put it back on the table where your spot was after it's over with. If you drew KP, and I only did it, as I remember, one time, you have the old Army mess sergeant, he supposed to have been, wash those cooking utensils and what have you in a number two wash tub, in which he'd take it and he'd shake it real good and hand it to you to dry.
How in the hell we kept from
all coming down with something, I don't know, because I can remember being kind of horrified with that.
What kind of meals did you have?
The meals were you know, that's a long time ago. But I don't remember them being disappointing at all.
Probably potatoes and carrots and stew.
Yeah, I mean, the meals were sufficient. We weren't used to all the things boys are nowadays. That was a day, I'd never had a hamburger in my life. And most of those boys never had it. We didn't have the fast food stuff that you got now. And we were sufficiently pleased with that. The first year we were there, we hiked over to the Richland Caverns, Richland Spring Caverns, which is a distance of some 10 to 12 miles, it seemed like 40. I can remember the first time I ever carried a canteen to really mean anything. And as you run out, you begin to parcel it out because there's not anybody else going to give you a drink of anything. There's nobody else to give you a drink out there. So we go over there, and the people from Richland Springs had prepared a watermelon feed for us and supper. And both of us get which what. But we spent the night there.
Went through the caves?
Went through the caves, spent the night, got up the next morning and hiked back. But we were real, the caves were, you know, they were something else, but they were also muddy as all get out. And you had a rope you had to hang on to get down. This day and time, you'd never let anybody do that at all. And I think since then they've been closed to the public altogether. But we were very appreciative of the people from Richland Springs for doing that.
Were the caves big to you or small?
They were small. We had our own set of caves there at Billy Gibbons. That first year I didn't get into them, but up the creek, a ways up Brady.
Cold Springs?
Cold Springs is down on San Saba. You hiked across to get to the San Saba, the Cold Spring, and there are some caves there. And the cold water, that was a trip everybody looked forward to. You'd think you're going to jump in there and stay a while.
To go.
You're not going to stay very long, I'll tell you that. You jump in there, I can see them now jumping in there, right back out, you know. But the caves I'm talking about were up toward our present camp, a ways and off to the north, and you go in these things, and I only went in once because I have a bit of claustrophobia, and going into the entrance, you snaked in there like a, you had some places, and I was small at that stage, but you got back in there in those, and it was great big rooms, you know, and of course everybody was looking out for rattlesnakes, thinking they would be in there, but they weren't. But one of the leaders, I don't know who it was, got hung up going in there, and I know that took some doing to get it. That's something you don't want to have happen to you at all. I'm sure those caves are still there. And J. Frank Dobie wrote Tarnata's Children, which had to do with gold that Mexicans had lost in a raid of the Indians, or the Indians had lost, whatever it was. It's supposed to be hidden in some of those San Saba caves, or in the Brady Creek cave. And that's why a lot of people went back in those caves looking for that gold. But to my knowledge, it's never been found. South of Cisco over here, around Nimrod, is supposed to have been one of the places. And I went out there and it looked like the moon was pockmarked. It dug everywhere in that area looking for this gold.
Did the waterfront, did y'all go canoeing when you were a kid?
No, I don't remember ever having a canoe down there. Yeah. Now, there may have been, but you walk down the road back toward the entrance where you turned off. Oh, it's a quarter of a mile down there, a little bit maybe more than that. And there was no... it was kind of a rock beach, and which is good because it wasn't all that, get all that mud on your feet. But they dammed this up to where it's deep enough to to swim in, and we used the buddy system, and it worked real good. I've always been proud of the fact that in all of the history of Billy Gibbons, we've never lost a boy drowning. And that's got to be something to be proud of, and that buddy system is the one that works. They had swimming races in those days, and I placed second in the freestyle 50 yards one time, but that was later on. But the reason I didn't make Eagle, and I never made Eagle, was one, I made Life, and life saving at that time was required, and still is one of the required. I guess maybe you can work around it now, but I tried with Tooth Gillum, and it came a matter of me drowning or not passing, or passing, and I took the lesser of the two. He got me down, and I could not break the hold at all.
You got rescue
him. And I didn't have parents that were pushing me like we do this day and time to work around him. And there was no place in around here to take life-saving, you know, at that stage. So when the Sea Scout thing came along, well, I moved over into that. Campfires were interesting. Cunier at that time was the what you wanted to be in.
Did you get into Cunier?
I got into Cunier my third year, I guess it was.
What do you remember?
I remember I was disappointed I didn't make it the second year, you know, and because what they do is they come around and pat you out. You're in bed. They went to bed in those days at 10 o'clock, you know, and they come in there and wake you up afterward and take you out over the trail and all of this stuff. And I remember in the initiation, they claimed that the earlier ones, wherever it was, had slit their wrists and put together to be a brotherhood, but they were using the curicone when I did it. I remember them dancing, and throwing of live snakes into the fire, which later on was verboten, you know, because that, but they actually did do that. I'm satisfied some of them came out of that fire about as fast as they went in it, if they could, you know. But I don't remember very much activity other than the initiation on the community.
That may have been all there was.
It could have been. And of course we went all over everywhere with them on that. Later on, when I got back in 1970, after I retired from the military, they gave me credit on the Order of the Arrow for...
You didn't have to go through the initiation.
The Brotherhood was my first effort down there. Worked as hard as I ever worked in my life on that. We enlarged the size of the council ring. The council ring was not, I'm talking about in the new area.
Yeah, how did they do that?
By that old wheelbarrow down there.
Yeah. Yeah.
By two or three of us with a rope in the front and others holding the thing in the back, piss-amped that dirt from the bottom of that creek up there where they may have brought something some other, but I don't remember it. I remember going up and down. That old wheelbarrow is an abomination of the Lord anyway.
Yes, it is.
You know, it is.
And old metal thing. It's a
flat bed thing, too. But we, at a later, I don't know if we got that all done that time or whether the next year's group got it finished and leveled and brought the rock up to where it's in its present configuration. In fact, and then we redid the paths to the bottom of the bluff at that time. The water going down channeled out that thing pretty bad, and I remember we had to, and we cut limbs off that tree that was blocking the view of the people on the south side of the ring of the order from the era. And we really cut a lot of limbs, had a big bonfire after that over limbs that came off of the thing. But back to the old area, trying to think if there's anything else.
Did y'all whitewash rocks?
Yes, we did.
Around and put them around your campsite?
And you had contests as to who had the best area. And this gave, especially those flammable tents, you could make them look pretty good.
We did that in the Army.
Yeah, y'all raked the ground and all
raked
that?
Raked the ground and everything. But as I say, we did some of that in the Army later on. I mean,
maybe it came out of
Boy Scouts. Can't move whitewash it, you know, type of thing. But the evening ceremony with the flag and all was just as it is. It been a given now.
Did they have the arrowhead shape around the flagpole at the old camp, or was it square, or they just lined up along one
line? It was rectangular around the thing. Trying to think if there's anything else.
The State Lodge, where was it?
It was.
Was it a tent or?
It was tent by the
shop.
Where they were selling drinks and whatever.
Oh, it
was that area. The archery range. Workers here, he's a precinct chairman and a Rotarian to keep the eye out for you as you're coming out.
I'm going
to
go out there.
He's a little fellow, doesn't weigh 100 pounds, has had very sick. Are you coming back after lunch?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because
what else do you remember about the old camp? What are your impressions as a kid of scouting in those days? Were y'all rough, tumble, do a lot of pranks on each other?
No, not all that much. Later on, as you get older, the earlier one or two years you don't, but later on, the last year I was there, which was 1935, I guess it was, I was on the staff as the bugler. I told you that I slept up by the mess hall, had a tent up by the mess hall, and they woke me up in the morning to wake the others up. And I had this bugle that I had that bought early on was not just the old GI Scout bugle, it was a longer bugle, and had the ability to carry the sound real good through there, and that's, you woke up by the bugle, you assembled with a view, mess call, they knew the call. And it's oddly enough, when the day I went into the Army commissioned on June the 8th, and went to the Army at Abilene on the 9th, over to the 45th Division from Oklahoma, years there. That was 1941, before the war.
Yeah.
And they kept me there for a couple of weeks before I went to Fort Sill. And I get in there, and it's still being run by the bugle. Everything in it was run by the bugle. Even officers call. I've never heard officers call before, but you learn what officers call was.
So what do you remember about being on staff? You there, what, 2 weeks?
We were there. I don't remember us being there 2 weeks. Now, it may have been 2 weeks later on.
I mean, as a bugler on the staff.
I don't remember being there 2 weeks.
Now, was there 1 week?
I'm. You're going to have someone tell you whether we were that 2 weeks started up the creek or down below here. You're going to get... have you got somebody talking to you about the flood and all of that?
No, don't know anybody about the flood.
Okay, Jimmy Browning, attorney here, was there. And he will be at Rotary today.
Browning?
Jimmy Browning.
Okay.
Little fella. But Jimmy was there, and that happened after I'd already gone to A&M, I think. It was during the war. I don't even know what year it was, but it was a scary time for the parents and everything, the marchers down there. The local people looked after them, but I understand, pretty good. Coming from the south side, they couldn't get to them from the north side, you know. One night there, Uncle John came. I remember to see us now. This was not Billy, but Billy,
he had died
in 33, I think it was. And
did you ever see him at the camp when you were there?
I don't remember. I don't think he was ever there. But I think John came later on.
That was his son.
That was his son. And Lampasas was there in good order, and San Saba was there in good order. More so, do we have San Saba today?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But those were good troops, Lampasas and San Saba. I remember had some good friends that later on went to A&M from those towns down there. O.E. Weinbrenner was the talk of the camp because he's the one that called you to attention, and he had a high pitched voice, you know. But he was a naturalist, and he liked to mess with things, and reportedly had been bitten twice by copperheads, but while messing with them. Now, whether that story is true or not, we used to have centipedes down there that were that long, you know.
Big as your hand.
And they, I don't know if they whatever got stung by one of them, but I do know you watched out for them, especially around firewood and stuff, where they, your fear of them was running up your leg, you know, because they were the most horrible looking darn thing that there ever was. Hey, well, I'm having trouble now thinking about anything else that would be.
Did anything stand out, any incident or thing that happened to you as a scout, either at camp or in Cisco?
Well, we had a good, that troop four was a good troop.
Where'd y'all go camping on the weekend?
We had Lake Bernie. There's a little lake out there northeast of Cisco, a little railroad lake, what it was. And we would go out there. We went to a place called Pop Rock, which was south of 80 back then. We loved to go out there because of Pop Rocks. You'd throw them in the fire, and they'd like little firecrackers. You'd go off. There's a lot of little ones. O.L. Stamey was the principal at grammar school, what we call grammar school, in those in sixth grade, et cetera, six to eight, six and seventh, I guess it was. But he was also kind of helped us out some. I passed shooting. Rifle shooting with his. Yep, I couldn't. I'll never forget one thing he told me, because I couldn't find targets. He said, "Well, you've got to show some initiative. You make your target, you know, show them." And I never forgot that you've got to show some initiative, you know. So that's one thing I remember from O.L. Stanley. He later on was president of the superintendent of the high school and of the junior college. And he loved it, like big lines of them, and later on in Eastland, but he loved to tell people that we were in school together. We were all right. But he was the only one that ever beat my ass. And I deserved it, but he was the only one that ever did. And he said, old Army Sergeant, I think we called him Sergeant, that was an Indian. He had his foot locker with all of the military stuff on it. But in those days, you spent a good deal of time making your own bow. You know, you start out with that piece of lemon wood or whatever it is, and I can remember scraping and scraping and scraping, you know, to get it down. But they had two or three, and they didn't have any roped off area or anything, but they had some targets. And I remember it darn sure wasn't as easy as I thought it was going to be, you know, to even get to the target. It took some doing, you know, type thing. But they had a contest for who made the best bow. And these were all straight bows. They never heard of a compound bow in those days. That was one of the outside activities that they had. And they had a bead.
Beadwork?
Beadwork. Kits, not near as polished as they are now, but we spent a lot of time making
Indian outfits.
Yeah, the Indian outfits.
Did you dance with them after you made them?
I don't remember ever dancing with any of them on there. We all, what we had, we were pretty raunchy looking bunch in shorts and whatever shirts it was. But we did dance. We did a lot of the Indian dancing all night. I don't know where we... I'll tell you somebody that really knows something about the year before that. Down there, old John Thomason there in Brownwood. He's a former CPMA. Surely he's retired by now. John Thompson, his brother James, was Brownwood's star football player back in the 30s, 7, 8, 9, went on to A&M, and he was our star fullback for 4 years, James Thompson. James is still alive. John has been down, John's a big old boy, but John helped build that band. He was there with the Bull Gang, they called it, the year before. And that group of people damn sure had some memories of the place. John Wood, of course, John's gone now, but John had
lots of memories.
Old. We had two nurses down there that lived in a tent. Where in the hell did they live? I guess they lived in the aid tent. But we had a decent aid station down there. We never had anybody hurt bad as far as I know. Did Frank remember on these early years that Billy Gibbons pretty good? He's got more artifacts than those.
He only remembers the first aid station being behind the dining hall.
Okay, then maybe that's where it was. I started to say that a while ago, because there was a little building back there. It was more of a lean-to
shed type.
Yeah, and I do believe that's right, rather than where I told you a while ago, because the
trading post
was right after where you expect it to be, just almost in the face of the mess hall, but room for everybody to sit down and get it without tromping around at the mess hall. Later on, they ran a slab down there, you know, on the mess hall. And I've been down there about 10 years ago. I drove down that road, couldn't get permission to run anybody there. But I went down there and looked to see, and it's the slab obviously is still there, with the names of any number of people who scratched their name in it, from Breckenridge as well as from that area down there. If you haven't been down there, you can go and see the size of the vessel with that.
I want to go see the Indian writings that are supposed to be still up the canyon somewhere.
They're up there. No one knows where they are, but they should still be there. I have a picture taken in front of Crystal Caves of a troop. I ended up with it in the 50s sometime, 8 by 10. If I find it, you're going to have it.
Yeah.
Because the troop is all, they're just, they're all over the place. But I don't recognize any of them, so I know I've got it. I've been through these files twice looking for what I remember, and I'm satisfied that when I left the bank up there, there's a couple of files back in there that one day they'll run into and wonder what the hell this is. You know, I mean, a file box. You need to go on out there if you're going to go.
I'll go out, and we'll get together after lunch.
Yes, sir.
Can I just leave this here?
But he was not only on your staff, but I think he was probably one of the leaders of it. I noticed in the mess hall, he was the one that
leading the singing.
Yeah, and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You bet. And I've had an easy life. He's got divorced parents, and as so many of them do this day and time, you know.
Very common.
And his daddy had been very active in scouting, starting out with taking the Cubs down there, and he was, I don't know how many times Billy went down there, but a number of them.
Well, I saw it when he said William Holt. I thought that was who it was.
Yeah, he's Will. They called him Will.
And on the varsity team.
One of the things I forgot to tell you a while ago was I think we've talked about it before, but the charge the first year was $7 that you put for the camp, for the fee, and that wasn't easy to come by at that. And I made mine in that uniform that you saw over there came from selling Saturday Evening Post, Ladies Home Gentlemen, Ladies Home Journal, and Country Gentleman. I never sold a Country Gentleman in my life, but they made you take some of them, you know. But that's exactly where my money came from to go to camp, and that's where my uniform. The Curtis Publishing Company had a points system that you could get a uniform, and that's where my uniform came from, was selling magazines. I think we've got that covered.
What do you remember about your scoutmasters or leaders?
Okay, I told you that Ernest Lennon was my scoutmaster down at, we went down the first time, and he was the druggist there at Dean Drug. Dean Drug is still there.
In Cisco.
He married Dean's daughter, and his daughter married Lloyd McGrew. So you've got all of that connection with the thing. And he was a good, quiet man, and one that we all, he was not really the gung-ho type as you see, but he did a necessary job. We didn't have as many campouts under supervision those days. You had the campouts, but we did them on our own.
That was true in the 40s when I was in scouting. We camped out, but we rarely ever had an adult.
We never had an adult.
You had a couple of high school kids, but
I never had an adult that I could ever remember going with us over there. When I came over here, Raleigh Baines, we came from Cisco over here. G. Raleigh Baines was the scoutmaster of Troop 18 and a real activist.
When was this?
This was in 34. We moved over here in 34 and went to camp with Troop 18, a Methodist troop here in 35. Homer Tudor, who you'll hear his name mentioned an awful lot, was the real big Cunier man. And looked after our troop down there on the camp. He died only 10 years ago. Never had any boys, never had any good girl. But two of the leaders, and one of them is gone now, who had the place, as you go through Brownwood, I'm trying to say Maxie, but that's not it. That had a shop, still got the sign up there.
Oh yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Came with.
He just recently passed away.
That's right.
Yeah.
And but they came up to see him in a nursing home before he gone. But I don't think, I was with him. I don't think that Homer really realized who he was talking to. But it had been his whole life, and he worked at the Hub Clothiers, and taught us all how to dress, or how we should dress, if we could get enough money to
buy the clothes,
you know. But he very definitely, you can go in that Hub now in the closet and everywhere you change clothes, or the heights of a lot of people my age and older, and or notes or something written in there at the time that they were measured for height. Raleigh Baines was an old World War I officer and still wore his puttees. Instead of wrap leggings, the officers had, if they couldn't afford boots, they had puttees, leather puttees that made it look like they had boots. And I can see him right now in the 4th of July or November 11th parade coming down in his old World War I uniform, you know. But he was the one that decided we were going to make all these trips, and the troop had. And when I came here, they'd already made one bus trip through Yellowstone or what have you, and they had one that I got to go on in 1935 or 6. In addition to camp, they did that.
Where did y'all go?
We headed, the charge on the thing for nearly 2 weeks was $26. That included everything. Paul Kirk, they called him, an old butcher here. They killed a beef that one of the ranchers had given, and they canned it. They cooked it and canned the beef. And that's what we had ever needed, was that canned beef along with whatever else they threw in. But I didn't think I'd ever want to, in my life, see any canned beef again, you know. It kept body and soul together, about all you can.
Where
say
all did y'all go?
So we headed out of here to Yellowstone Park.
By bus?
By school bus. At that time, they'd let you take a school bus. And we had a load, and in fact, to get the optimal number, we had to get a couple of boys from Rangers to go, and I was in on the recruiting, and it was a mistake, because they were absolute stinkers. One of them was a thief on top of everything else. I haven't had many kind feelings toward the city of Ranger anyway, for a lot of reasons. And those kids, I can show you the house where I went up there and got him to go on this trip. But we went to Salt Lake City in the distance of Yellowstone, and the coldest night we had was at Salt Lake City. Isn't that odd? I remember that damn, I like that, froze to death.
Y'all wind camp out?
Huh?
Y'all camp out?
Oh yeah, camp out everywhere. We stopped going up in northern New Mexico, up at
Raton?
Raton, that's right. That's where that was our first night out.
Well, they have a park there or something out there.
Okay, yeah, that's the first night out. And all up into there, Salt Lake City. And we did Salt Lake City pretty good. We did the
Mormon Tabernacle.
And listened, and got a choir. The choir was practicing or something. We got to hear part of that. They could show us you could drop a pin in there and hear it clean from the back. I remember that that part of it. But that's my only trip to Salt Lake City. I've never been back to Salt Lake City. I've been back to Yellowstone.
Y'all
then we went all down to Grand Canyon.
Y'all spend much time at Yellowstone or just one night?
We were there two or three nights, and there was more to see than just.
Yeah.
We kind of ended those people in those log houses over there, all right. But by this time, we were, you know, pretty, as I said, that night at Salt Lake City, the wind was blowing so much, and coming underneath that tent, I remember that part of it. But it was a 2 weeks educational trip, and then I've never been back to the Grand Canyon, and never been back to Salt Lake.
Must have got saturated.
That's right. We were at Colorado Springs, too. At Colorado Springs.
Did y'all take any more trips besides that one? Or
that was the only one that I was on. That was the second one he had done. And shortly after, I imagine when the war came on, he moved to East Texas or something. But he had a real active troop. He taught, you tell he's military from way back, but I remember in the basement of that church, bore sighting rifles and showing you how he had classes in target shooting, really what it actually amounted to. But at that time it was, I thought 18 was the troop here in town, and I've always thought that, really. So 63 came along. And these things grow and die with the leadership, you know, on the thing.
Longer than ever.
Yeah, you know about that. Well, I'm going to digress a little bit here now. And my boys came along. I got married in 59. Does that sound right? Yeah, got married in 59. And these kids came right along, 1, 2, 3, 4, a little better than 5 years. But I didn't get into scouting much until they got to where they could at least go with me some on the campus. Frank, I didn't let them be in the Cubs, but I have this feeling that I don't voice very often, but I felt like it would burn them out. And I had ambitions of them making even when I didn't. But Frank would let us go along on campouts earlier on, and we'd camp out to the side, away from, and the boys were all good-natured about it, you know. So they got in on the camping, the fun part of it, before they ever got to be scouts. And Frank was always good to and of course, once they got to be scouts, well, I went with Frank practically every time that we went on anything. I got on the council, somewhere along in there, got on the council, and about 75 or 76, got to be vice president, and then moved up to president of council. Just in time to find that we had a problem down at camp, with the Mays family over a number of incidents that had happened. And if this bores you, well, now it's important in a way, because...
What was Mays' name, do you remember?
The two boys, they were boys down at, they're both...
That married Doc Brady, right?
Brady. But his father is still alive. Or was, she died. Now, she was John's daughter. They had this night where we turned to go to camp. After you get in there, if you just go straight, you can see that beautiful home. You've probably been in it up there.
No.
Beautiful home, swimming pool, and the whole ball of wax. And the problem had been unauthorized use of the camp facility, part of it. People coming in and out that shouldn't have been down there in the first place. And of course, some of the people weren't scouting at all. They didn't go inside our gate, but to have this nice area there just to the right of, and east, west of our gate, back in there. And they were complaining about that. And then I'm down there with Ellen on an OA weekend, Right as that happened, before I came president, in fact. I think that was right before it. Just as it, but they had this 4A fire up there on the other side of the council ring that had stayed quiet all day long. Eldon had gone into Brownwood or to someplace. I'm sitting on the porch having taken a bath, getting ready for later on activities. He comes running up, "You've got a fire." Well, I'm had no idea what he was talking about, but we come around, run around the mess hall, and you can see the smoke and the fire all going up there toward that fence. And we all grab wet toe sacks or wet branches, or just branches, and we start chasing that thing. Hell, I'm 50 some odd years old, and I'm no guarantee you one thing. It was a tester, that one was. I at one time lay down on the ground, just flat lay on the ground, because as we start, it just keeps mushrooming. South wind blowing, and the hopes of us stopping it just about going outside. You'd think that you'd just about get something, and then you'd see one of these cedars just burst into flame, even behind you, you know, type of thing. So, it goes on up. In the meantime, they had called in to the Richland Springs Fire Department, and they had to get organized before they ever got out there. And they come in over on the, they got in over on the, what I call the east side of it. And as we come down over this hill, there's some of them working kind of back, not back fire, but getting it out. And oddly enough, going downhill, fire doesn't go near as fast as it does going up. But superintendent of the ranch, who was the brother of our football coach up here, has been down there until just not too long ago. Take a bit. Damn, I'm trying to think of somebody's name. He meets me out there on the road, he comes in there, and we start putting it out, from waiting for it and putting it out, you know, and we got it out. Burned off about 200 acres. Now, this right on top of them already doing that complaint. Well, the complaints that existed, one was that in the stipulation of the lease or the deed, whichever, that there would be a suitable monument prepared to Uncle Billy Gibbons. Well, when they built the flagpole, they put these two, you got a picture of him on one side anyway, maybe on both sides, of Uncle Billy, plates that are set in there now, as you know. And that people had shot 22s into them and had damaged them, which we heard about that too. So after the fire, Eldon and I go up to Mr. and Ms. Mays. And Ms. Mays was just gracious herself. We couldn't tell too sure about him, you know, the way he was acting on it. And we got old John Wood in the act too, because John knew more about them than anybody else. But I came on back to Breckenridge, and Joe Hanna's wife, Betty, one that you just were with here today, has been active in historical things herself. In fact, she may still be on the Historical Commission down in Austin. But I got her to help me with preparing this monument that took us. Boy, it ain't that easy. You know, it's back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It was the better part of 2 years before we got it done. But we got that done, and with the help of the San Saba Historical Society, San Saba County Historical Society, headed by an attorney, and I've forgotten his name, who was at the dedication itself. And we really made a big deal out of the dedication, the Dutch McGregor, you've heard his name mentioned before, was married to a daughter our niece or something, or local business, whatever. But there was no, feeling of between the Mays and them at all. In fact, she wasn't going to come if Mrs. McGregor came, you know, to the
dedication.
That kind of stuff. But with the dedication of the monument, and the Mays, one of the Mays boys, after it's over with, came over and thanked me. That's the only time he had ever, for having done it. And after that, Eldon certainly put a clamp on people utilizing that camp without permission. I mean, you're supposed to get permission if you're going to go in there, and you're doing the same thing, I'm sure. But I'm sure it had been before Eldon really had gotten into it. It had been
just anybody wanted to
pretty damn that. Lax. And as you know, you've been around Walt a number of them enough to know that they felt like if they needed a camp down there, that was all really that it needed. Right. I'm not saying they did it without permission, but they certainly felt like they had it.
Always felt that Wally has a set of keys to that camp.
I'm satisfied as I can be that he does.
He just goes down there when he wants to.
Yeah, and I didn't. That was not. Anyway, when I got into the presidency, I sure felt a lot of relief, and I've had, including last year, the year before, I've always sent Mays a Christmas card, and he's always sent me one since then. And I think he died, though. If I'm not mistaken, I think he died. And I didn't know about it till, or I'd have been down at the funeral, because it was important. I consider it important that our relationship with the Mays be maintained as good. And they're not that easy to get along with. I don't know whether you know them or not.
I had some dealings with them, the SCAT executive.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. They're both Aggies, and ordinarily I can kind of count on that relationship with me with them, you know, having some bearing, but I didn't remember. Anyway, he did thank me. It was a beautiful ceremony. We had a little band, string band or a country band or some sort of, we had band playing.
Is this during summer camp you dedicated it?
No, it was at a special occasion. Mm-hmm.
I've never seen any photographs or anything.
The picture on the wall down there of it, or the, it's supposed to be.
In the building?
I thought it was back there. I took it. I mean, let's see here. It may be, and I just, this is one of the, this is what was in our paper.
I'd like to have a copy of these, just a Xerox copy or a copy machine copy of these articles.
I think I've got an extra. Let me see if that is an extra. I went through this stuff kind of hurriedly yesterday afternoon. Heavy. How about heavy? Tiny. Heavy.
I know Ron Curbo, and I know Walker.
Bigger than Curbo.
Yeah.
Okay. But he's one that pretty well engineered.
Bob Ryder.
And we got enough wood in that roof to hold up the building.
What did have in Kennedy?
I'm talking about now on the trading floor.
Right.
And getting that tin on there was exciting, because we're having to stand on those cross members. And if you look about the fourth one from the end, on this end, it's been spliced. Well, I was standing on it when it gave way.
Broke.
And I go,
now, I remember seeing that one spliced.
That one, I sailed down through there. I tell you, but it had worked well. And there's not, I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, it's no more than what we had. And I, over at Six Flags, I got that sign that says it was built by the OA or whatever. I've got one of the things I did too on Billy Gibbons at the time of the monument was the Sam Saba, the County Historical Society gave me the picture of Uncle Billy that that we took and enlarged. And you got one in the office. I think we put one in the office, and we put the one that should still be in the
dining hall
down there. So that was done, and those were up, I think, when they had the people down there. So they felt like it, we had solved it, whatever was needed.
He received the recognition that they felt he was due.
Well, and I don't